All right, as we get started here, first and foremost, I would like to thank our very generous sponsors this morning, Michael and Rebecca Azrin, who have sponsored this morning's learning commemoration of the yahrzeit of his beloved father, Solomon Chaim Azrin, Shlomo Chaim Ben Harav Nisim Yehuda, his neshama should have an aliyah, and in the merit of studying Torah together, it should be a schos, a merit for the entire family. Thank you so much, Azrin, for your generous sponsorship this morning's learning. Top of the week, Monday morning, contemporary cases in Shas. This morning, we have a very interesting case that we're going to study together. And I guess as a way of introducing this case, one of the fascinating debates that is had in the rabbinic circles, and when I say the rabbinic circles, this is something that's been going on for clearly centuries, but also certainly more contemporary as well, and that is just the avenue and the invent and involvement of outreach. And when I say the avenue and invent and involvement of outreach, we talk specifically about how it is outreach is supposed to go. You know, today, let's talk specifically about South Palm Beach County. There's however many hundred, over 100 some odd thousand Jews in South Palm Beach County who are either affiliated, not of course in any way, shape or form, or if they are, it's very much minimal, and there's a tremendous amount of outreach, whether it's Chabad, whether it's Or Sameach, whether it's Eshet Torah, whether it's the Boca Jewish Center, whether it's just any person, any people professionally, when you are able to engage somebody who is yet to follow Torah mitzvos the way Shulchan Aruch, the way the Torah would prescribe. So the question then becomes, what is that? And how does that work? What's the Torah source for that? V'hafta l'reacha kamocha? Is it v'hafta s'Hashem elokecha? What's the source? What motivates that? What are the parameters of that when you're trying to encourage people to follow the Torah? So we're going to understand that there are certain avenues that might, obviously might not be as tactical, might not be as ideal, but certainly when you think about it, there's a certain sense of, whether it's leniency, whether it's a sense of welcome, whether it's a sense of patience. You know, one of the things that makes Chabad Chabad is that, you know, they're commonly described as an institution that welcomes any and all. Is there a limit to that? I remember once having a conversation with a Chad, a Shaliach of a certain town, who said that, you know, that's their philosophy always. It doesn't ever come with term limits. That means if a person chooses to be in that way for as long as a Chabad rabbi would know that person, so it's good. They look for whatever is going to be what would motivate, what would inspire that person now, whereas others would say that, okay, you can do outreach up until a certain point, but at a certain point, you expect people to, you know, kadima a little bit, to move forward. And so therefore, at what point, or are there parameters of that? And we're going to see that there's a very interesting Ramah, Rabbi Moshe Isserles, which is the halachic authority that the Ashkenazim that we follow, has an interesting statement just as it relates to forcing people and encouraging people and things of that sort. But the backdrop of this whole conversation is trying to figure out, what are those limits, if there are any? You know, having a conversation, somebody who's being mechallel Shabbos in public, Befar Hesia, do you have an obligation to tell that person? Do you have the obligation to follow up with that person? How is it that you encourage people who are rachlik, who are distanced, who are far, or maybe other people have an obligation? So we're going to use that as kind of what will set the tone and set the conversation underway as we have it now. And again, as we've said many times, some of these cases that we learned together are really just a, you know, an example of where many could be applied, but just an example just to get the conversation started. Okay, so we're in Simen Lamed Aleph, chapter 31 in the Shulchan Aruch here. And in this case, we're going to see that there's a Gemara, there's a Ramah, there's a Shulchan Aruch, and we'll take it from there. Okay, so for those of you who have the source sheets, we're in chapter 31. Now, the case is Scharo Nahag Monit, Sheyashli Minyan. You have somebody who is a taxi driver. Now, obviously, we're talking about a taxi driver who is in Eretz Yisrael, Jewish taxi driver. And whether or not there's an obligation to pay this taxi driver, this Nahag Monit, who is needed for a minyan, he comes and is mashlim, he completes the minyan. Now, the question is he wants to get paid. So does he deserve to get paid? Does he deserve to get paid for his time? And if, in fact, he does deserve to get paid for his time, then who pays him? Why should he get paid by other people? Maybe he has an obligation in and of himself. So let's see. Mi chayv lishtatef b'tashlum. So that's the question, is who would be obligated to pay? Now, the question assumes that somebody's obligated to pay. one of the assumptions might be that the obligation that everybody has is Torah, Tziva, Lanu, Moshe, Mora, Shaki, Ilas, Yaakov. Everybody has an obligation to follow the precepts, the commandments. And so therefore, what we say, as the Gemara in Maseches Erechin teaches, Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeba Zeba Mitzvos, which means it's not just that I'm a guarantor and I am to guarantee the fulfillment of and the righteousness and the pursuing of righteousness of every single person. That statement is a complete statement. Kol Arevim, Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeba Zeba. Now, many people just stop the phrase in that way, Kol Yisrael Revim Zeh B'Zeh, but actually it stopped, Kol Yisrael Revim Zeh B'Zeh B'Mitzvos, right? Which means we have an obligation to be a guarantor, to be sure to it, that everybody, not just ourselves, but other people are doing mitzvos. Did you put on your tefillin? Did you put on tzitzis? Did you make Shabbos? V'chule, v'chule. So that's what the Gemara says. If that's true, why in the world should I have an obligation, theoretically? Anybody should have that obligation to pray with a minyan. It's like when people say, you know, that person has a chiyuv to daven for the omid. A person has a chiyuv to daven every single day, not just when a person has a yard site. And it could be that even though a person has a yard site, davening for the omid might be, there might be some other things that a person could do, or maybe, dare I say, should do. We had a case recently in the shul where multiple, and many times you have this in shuls all over, you have multiple people that have an obligation for the omid. They both, two families, two people have a yard site on the same day. So what do you do? Both of them are trained to think that davening for the omid, which it is, as Shulchan Aruch writes, is ideal. It's how you honor and remember and engage in, that's your activity of the day on a yard site. But what happens if you have two people on the same day? You don't have multiple daily minyanim, or you don't want to go to a later minyan because of that. That's a conversation for a different time. So what you do is one of them was able to be mevater. What's mevater mean? They were able to be forgiving and give up that, the bima, give up the davening for the omid as the chazan. Now, the Gemara teaches that a person who's mavir al midosav, a person who's mevater, a person who's forgiving, a person who is willing to relinquish for their own covered reasons, but to give somebody else covered, to give somebody else honor, that person gets a tremendous reward. So it could be argued that that person who gives up the omud to be able to have somebody else have it, it's not that they're missing an opportunity to honor their loved ones. They're actually maybe giving greater elevation, greater schus. Look at what kind of descendant I have that's willing to create peace and tranquility and harmony and matrimony, whatever it is, to be sure to it that other people should be able to have the fulfillment of what they need to have fulfilled. So we see that this is just a backdrop of understanding just the question, mi chayev lishtatev b'tashlum, who's obligated? So we're going to see that there's a mathematical, there's a based in component of this, but functionally, just by way of just exploring the question, maybe nobody should be obligated. Maybe a person has an obligation, so therefore we encourage people to do it. We do anything we can. We, you know, get sushi platters and cholents and things, all the things that we'll do to try and encourage people to do what we want them to do. But at the end of the day, that doesn't mean that we have that obligation to do it. It's just like putting, you know, kind of the things that are necessary to make the things happen that we want to make them happen. But let's get into the case a little bit more. Yep. Okay. So there's a yeshuv katan. There's a small yeshuv in Eretz Yisrael. Hamonish Neimasar Ish, which is interesting that there's the count, I guess, of however many men there are. There's only 12 men that are in that yeshuv katan, in a small settlement. V'heim mishtadlim tamid lavo lebeis haknesses lispalo b'minyan. Now they really make every effort that they possibly can, right, to be sure to it that they're able to make a minyan. They realize that there are certain prerequisites that every community is supposed to have. Now, I'm not saying minyan is the number one. You know, having a mikvah is a big one, of course. Having a number of other religious activities, of course, is a beis haknesses, and having a minyan that's there is significant. So therefore, they would make it their business to be sure to it that even though they had 12 is a small number, no one could really get sick, nobody could really be quarantined, nobody would be able to leave to the office before everybody had a minyan. And they made every effort, did everything they possibly could to come to the beis haknesses, to come to the minyan, to make sure that there was constantly services. V'hine kara mikra shahayu b'beis haknesses rak tisha. It happened that it turned out that on one occasion, what happened? That there was only 9 people that showed up. Only 9 people. Yep. So Nakat Gabai Yuzma, that the Gabai had a brilliant idea. He had some genius thought. He said, here's the idea. Here's what he's going to do. They need to be mashal the minyan. And by the way, it's interesting. It doesn't say here, now it could be that it was true, but it doesn't say that the reason why they needed to make a minyan was so that someone should say Kaddish. We're very sensitive to people who have to say Kaddish, but it should be no less significant, or maybe a little less, but it's definitely not insignificant that person should, you know, daven with a minyan, irrespective of whether or not there's a Kaddish that's going to be said, or there's going to be being able to be mishtatif, so that the person who's saying Kaddish, either themselves or for somebody else, that they should say it. But it goes without saying that obviously we make every effort today that for people are saying Kaddish, that we are very sensitive that they should have a minyan. But it doesn't say that that's part of this question. Part of this question is that simply there was nine. So Nakat Hagabai, he has this thought. So he decides, V'yatza l'kfish harashi. He's going to go out to the, you know, the general roadway, the highway or the main road. V'yatza monit, and he's going to stop a monit. Now, I don't know if it's still true like this now. Maybe Charlie could tell us, maybe anybody else has been to Israel. More recently, it used to be that the taxis in Israel, if I remember correctly, I think there's some level of where that's still true, where they were identified as either Jewish taxis or non-Jewish taxis, right? At least when I was in yeshiva, if the taxi had a number 9 as the first number on the, you know, on the indicator of its taxi, what's it called? On the top of the taxi, whatever that, I'm sure there's a word for that. So if there was a number 9, you knew that it was an Eino Yehudi. Whereas, if it wasn't the number 9, now there's a Degel Yisrael, they have, you know, the Bar Ilan, you know, Rechavia, you know, the names of the Chevra of the ones who have only Jewish drivers. So good, he comes out to the Kfish HaRashi, to the public way, the public roadway, and let's assume he stops a Jewish taxi. So this is not going to happen in on Broadway in New York City, on Amsterdam. You know, the likelihood of it being a Jewish taxi, although it happened to me once. I stopped a New York City taxi once, and it was, a bearded Yiddish fellow, which I was like, a little, it's usually not the case. Fine. If you had some money, he says to the driver, so he says, you should start the moneh, start the meter, put the meter on. And you know what's going to happen? We're number 9, you're number 10. But we're not just going to ask you, minion, come to the minion. We're going to come and we're going to pay for you being there. Now, just, I guess, tongue in cheek, or maybe parenthetically, is what about somebody else? You know, it's happened before. It's happened before that we were short a minion. And, we called the proprietor of the bagel shop. And we'll say, you know, do me a favor. Can you come to help mashlim a minyan? There are people saying Kaddish. We want to have a minyan in the shul. Yeah, thankfully, it doesn't happen all too frequently anymore, Baruch Hashem. But it's not impossible. It's not out of el left field. It can happen every blue moon, every once in a while. So the question is, what's the difference between, or is there a difference? Is there a difference between a nahag monit, who he's driving and this is his fare, or a person who's selling bagels, this is his business? Is there a difference between that person who's a schir yom, a person who works as a kablan in kablanut, which means he's a salaried worker versus an hour day worker, and therefore he's losing money because otherwise he would be out getting fares? Or maybe it's anybody, like time is money. It's therefore, if you want my time, yeah, it's my money. Therefore, I'm happy to do it, but it's going to cost you $20 to do that. So he says here, start your meter. And you should come to the synagogue. You'll be number 10, and we'll have a minion. Okay. So now, and we will pay you. Whatever the moneh shows is what we're going to, pay. Now, obviously, is there tarich shtayim? Is that the word? Tarich Shtayim? I think there's a night fair. There's a day fair and there's a night fair. I think it's called Tarich Shtayim. Tarich Shtayim is, I think, after 7 o'clock, the Nahagim Oniyot, they up their fare. So this guy is not only, it's not like he's davening a Shachris, he's davening a Mincha that's at one time and a Ma'ariv that's at a different time. Let's assume it's maybe towards the summertime or time of this time of year. So by the time he gets to Ma'ariv, it's our Tarich Monit. So he's going to have, so the worst things to do during his, instead of driving around Ashdod and Cholon, and you'd be able to then stop and be able to daven mincha ma'ariv, kefi shura ma'ariv, whatever the moneh is going to say what the fare is, he's going to have to pay. So nahag hiskim. So the nahag agrees, no problem. Vispalo b'beis hakneses tefilas mincha. He goes into the shul, he davens the mincha. So k'shiv l'shiur ha'mishnayis. He stays for the Rav who learns Mishnayis between Mincha and Ma'ariv, he's Palogah Ma'arivis, and then he davens Ma'ariv. And obviously, it's not the question, but let's assume what would happen if the difference between the fair, as I'm just thinking as I'm reading this here now, is let's just say if the rabbi did not learn Mishnayis between Mincha and Ma'ariv, and then he'd be able to daven Mincha and Ma'ariv, with a tarich Aleph, not tarich Shtayim, that he'd be able to pay a less amount. And it depends on where the money's coming from. Is the money coming from Mamon Hektish? Is it coming from communal funds? Is it coming from the treasury of the synagogue? Is it coming from Yechidim? Is it coming from individuals? Or do we say that no, we have to be mezakeh this fellow to himself has an obligation to learn Torah? Or do we say, and there's a lot that comes up here, or do we say that Tfilas Mincha is a din d'oraisa, is a biblical obligation? As the Gemara Brachas learns from Yitzchak Avinu, Misuach Hasoda, Misuach Basoda, as the Pasuk in Tehillim explains the Gemara as well, Pasuk in Chumash, that he comes from the field that Mincha is Daraisa. What about Ma'ariv? Ma'ariv is a tefillah Rishus. It's a non-obligatory, non-biblical tefillah. It's a tefillah that's considered optional. Now, we've accepted it upon ourselves as mandatory, but do any of these variables matter? The fact of the matter that if there would be the difference between fair, the rabbi should say, or the other people that are there, you know, let's not learn Mishnayos today because the difference of paying them, you know, 90 shekels versus 100 shekels, maybe it's mamon hektish. You know, we're very free. You want to be forgiving and free flowing with your own money, that's one thing, but if you want to be forgiving and free flowing with other, with mamon hektish, that's a different story. Or the fact that it's all right, so you'll daven b'yichidus tefilas arvis, but you daven shachris with a minion, daven mincha with a minion, and that's it. Okay, so be happy with what it is. Tfilas Arvis is a reshus. So we'll ask the question, and we'll open it up here. So hikshiv l'shira mishnayis v'gam, if he's palo gam arvis, he not only davens mincha, he learns mishnayis, he stays for the limud, and then he davens marv, v'gamar hatfila, and once davening's over, hara maneh meh shekel, he sees the meter shows 100 shekel, and agabai shilim lo, he pays him as he promised him to Ruhu Lishalom, and he goes and he sends him away like he's takes leave of him Lishalom in peace. And good, everything is as he promised. Shalom al Yisrael. Okay, questions, comments, concerns about some of those points that we threw out there? Tfilas Arvis Rishus, Tarich Shtayim, obligation, maybe who should pay, why should anybody pay?
Can I just say, I feel like, you know, I understand that even in the real world with real jobs, let's say you happen along and they're desperate for somebody, you could get higher pay than somebody who has a job like that already. And so business is business. But somehow in this situation, it feels wrong to me that everybody else has an obligation. Again, people are feeling desperate. And so I understand that people would pay. But somehow I feel like that other person should, I don't know, have a place in his heart not to accept it.
So you're saying what feels wrong is not to ask him. You say what feels wrong is that the guy should accept the money. Is that right?
Right. That is correct.
And I feel that basically, as a Jew, you know that you have certain obligations. So why would you feel the need to be paid? This is part of the so Jewish maybe thing.
But they're always going to
So maybe part of the question. Right. So it seems maybe you're saying it sounds like he's taking advantage of it. Maybe it could be, though, argued that he has an obligation to daven. He has an obligation to daven the minion, but does he have an obligation to daven in that minion? Meaning the fact that he's working, I want you to do something during your day. He says, no, I'll daven later. I'll daven at a different time. This is my work hours. This is when I earn money to feed my children.
Yes, but for money, sure, I'll change my ways, my schedule. That's it.
No, but for money, instead of me getting a fare and getting, right, so then I'll sure, it's no different than me getting a fare. I'll, you know, if you'd start a meter and you take me to downtown Tel Aviv, take me to Dizengoff Square, and you have a meeting and you want me to sit in the taxi to wait for you because you don't know if there's going to be another taxi for me, for you to be picked up after your meeting. So you're saying, okay, keep the meter running. So you're just going to sit there. So, okay, I'll sit there. If you're going to pay me for my time to sit there, time is money. So why would that be bad? It only feels that it's bad. I'm just playing devil's advocate. It only feels like it's bad because, as Linda said, he has an obligation. So once his obligation, once he's going to benefit from it, or once he's going to do what he's supposed to do, like, why would you take money for that? That's what you should do. That's what you should do.
People who should be coming to me that are part of the shul and are not coming.
I'm not going to pay them for sure.
Well, I understand, but those people are not coming and they should be coming. So if you're looking to get a minion, you have an opportunity to have somebody make the minion, and the person is not part of the shul, and he's got his own obligations to make a living.
But as a Jew, you have an obligation to go to a minion, to daven. And if you do this, it's not only fulfilling your obligation, but it's on top of that, a mitzvah, because you're fulfilling something for someone else.
Can't hear you.
Can't hear you.
Sorry, I don't know what happened there. Yeah, not only because there's a Kaddish, but you're fulfilling it because other people, even without Kaddish. But that would be that's an interesting idea. You have a fledgling, growing community that's really started from scratch, and you really don't have a rabbi colleague friend who's a rabbi in South Bend, Indiana, and he's like in a suburb area in South Bend, and said that they started paying some kollel guys from neighboring town to come in to help them make a minyan because they realized that that's the only way that the minyan will kind of get jump started, when really everybody has an obligation. Seems as if, you know, at what point is that person able to do that? What if like number 11 walks in? Should that guy walk out? Can a guy say, no, you needed me for the minion while there was no minion, but now there's a minion? Okay, so either I can leave, and what if he chooses to stay? So now do we deduct the amount of time that he was there while we needed him? And then anybody could really say, right? Like Charlie, you're saying, I think if I'm understanding Charlie, what you're saying correctly is that really everybody has an obligation. People don't come who have an obligation. So obviously we're not going to start paying people to come because that would be, that'd be atrocious. But sure, we oftentimes consider how is it that we're gonna get people to come, whether it's learning, whether it's davening, whether it's things of that nature. I'm not saying our shul, but there are shuls, communities abound that, like, you know, have kolels, morning kolels. The whole institution of what they call a kolel boker. A kolel boker started because the shul didn't have a minion. So they started having learning. You pay some chevra to come to learn in the morning, and then they're okay. Meanwhile, they're there for the learning, so they'll stay for the davening. And that's what's going to be.
When we were a shul with a different name, and we were over by Dunkin' Donuts, we were supported by the kollel, which was in existence. And I can't tell you how many times we went next door to Dunkin' Donuts to see if there was someone there to make a minion. It was like a routine thing on a Saturday morning.
Really?
And sometimes the kollel guys didn't show up.
Wow.
It was dicey. And, you know, and you can't pay on Shabbos.
So then I guess there's two parts of this. There's the from the eyes of the taxi driver, and then it's the eyes of the community. Like, does the community have the right to do anything about it? What are we supposed to do? Like, we're not going to, you know, close up shop, but what do you do? Can you do something about it? Doc, what do you want to add?
I would not sit in judgment over the taxi driver. The taxi driver also has an obligation to support a family. And, you know, the other nine people there, you know, maybe they don't have that need. I think it's very unfair to go over to someone and say, we're going to let you do a mitzvah. It's going to cost you, though, because you're going to lose a fare, and that's your parnasa. I don't think the community can sit in judgment over that kind of an individual. Right. It's very unfair.
Right. Would that apply to, I guess, theoretically, that could apply to anybody's profession, right? I mean, anybody could argue that their time could be taken away from time spent elsewhere for the benefit of their family and their tzarche habayis. So, right? Is there a slippery slope that, I mean, maybe the case of a taxi, we can see it clearly, clear as day, like, if they don't get a fare, they're not going to make money. But is there a dangerous slippery slope that if we do say, though, that, you know, that we're going to allow ourselves to pay people to come and that becomes a precedent that could be taken advantage of? Like, anybody could say, like, all right, listen, I'll do what you want me to do, but here's the cost. Here's what it's going to cost you. Right? And then the volunteers who are doing it You know, like, wow, I got to go into that business. That's a different, that's a business that's profitable, right? All right. So we'll get into that in a second. All right. So look at the second paragraph. All good points. Ke'es his ara gabai. Now the gabai has this thought. After he pays him and after he sends him on his way, the gabai now has a separate thought. And this is where things get a little, I wouldn't say dicey, but also very, a little interesting, all the more so. Ke'es his ara gabai mehechan yikaches hamea shekel. Now he wants to know, he pays him 100 shekels, but where does he take that money from? Who's obligated on that money? Is that money, like, who made that decision? Like, you can see somebody saying, if you're one of the mispalalim, you're one of the nine, you're the one of the eight, let's say, and he's the gabbai, he's number nine. He says, all right, we'll give you 100 shekels. He makes this deal in the street. He makes this, you know, bamboozy of a deal outside. The other guy's like, 100 shekels? What, are you kidding me? Like, the treasurer is not the gabbai. The treasurer is also one of the eight. He's like, I'm not 100 shekels. You want to pay 100 shekels? You pay 100 shekels. I'm not paying 100 shekels. Like, the shul's not paying 100 shekels. Do we need a board meeting, a general assembly meeting? Like, who decides that? So he wants them to, heichan yikach es hamea shekel. Where does he get the money from? Ayim mekupas beis haknesses. Does he take it from the kupa, from the tzedaka, from the pushka, from the funds of the shul? O shema kol echad, or here's another option. Maybe, no. Every one of the nine who are in the minyan should participate. Why? Because after all, they were beneficiaries of it. Maybe because of the fact that they're beneficiaries of the minyan, they should share the burden, they should share the cost. The shul should pay for it. The minyan should pay for it, the people that are there. Now, that obviously lets off the hook the people that aren't there. Well, let's assume for argument's sake, It was a community of 180 families or 500 families, and only 12 people came, and only 9 people came. So you're going to tax the 9 people that came? Those are the 9 people that came. If it wasn't for them, there wasn't even a shot at it. So there's a second option. So it's not only that, either it's the shul that's going to pay for, whatever that means, the shul, the treasury of the shul. The second option is, kol echad ma'amispalim yishtateh ba'itzah. But maybe it should be that every one of the other people that came there, they should pay for it. Why? Ki sof kol sof, because at the end of the day, kol echad herviach lispalah b'tzibur, because at the end of the day, everybody gained something. What did everybody gain? They got to daven tefillah b'tzibur. Tefillah b'tzibur is an immeasurable, hugely, hugely beneficial activity that we strive to and yearn to be able to do. So maybe the fact is that the difference between davening b'yichidus, this quantifiable, immeasurable, I should say, difference between davening b'yichidus and davening b'tzibur is something that the other 9 people, they had a revach, they had a reviach lispal b'tzibur, so therefore, as beneficiaries of it, maybe they should participate in the paying of it. Now, they weren't there to negotiate the deal, so why should they be on the hook for it? But okay. And you could say, what's 100 shekel divided by, you know, really by 10, by 9? How much does it come out to be? It's grushim. It's not grushim. Who's grushim? I should tell you how much grushim. That's the guy works, a 9-to-5 job, and that's not nothing. That's important. That's real money to some people. Who am I to spend your money for that? But no. Now we're going to get into valuing the difference between davening tefillah b'tzibur versus davening b'yichidus, which obviously the chiyuv, the obligation, is to daven. Let's be very clear. The biblical obligation, as the Rambam writes in Hilchos Tefillah, is to daven. It's not an obligation to daven with a minyan or to daven with certain times, as is what we do. That's a kol hamar bareza meshubach. That's part of the Rambam's compilation of Hilchas Tefillah, how we daven it with. There's a mila, there's a benefit, but if you can't daven tefillah b'tzibur, you don't do it. If you don't have a shofar, you don't blow a trumpet, right? You wouldn't do the mitzvah. The mitzvah doesn't exist. Right, you don't take the fronds outside and start shaking a lulav and esser with fronds and lemons. Right, in this case, if you can't daven tefillah b'tzibur, the next best thing, it's not a 10 and optimal, but it's a 6 or a 4 or who knows what, but it's still that you daven. So, 1 second. So, it's true that it's now we're ranking not just doing a mitzvah, but now doing a mitzvah in an ideal way. So, here we see the davening b'tzibur, it's greater. So, they had a hirviach, they were able to have benefit from it. So, since they gained from davening b'tzibur, so therefore, that's the second possibility. And the final possibility is v'ulai ha-mispalel. Now, here's the other third possibility. And then I would add a fourth. The third possibility is v'ulai ha-mispalel shalobolis l'tfilo yisa b'itzos. Maybe the guy or the guys, right? Remember we said at the beginning, there were 12 people that were in the community. And there's only 9 of the people that they came. So that means there's 3 people that didn't show up. Maybe those people have to pay for it, because at the end of the day, that's part of, okay, there's a responsibility, there's a chiyuv, they have to keep it up. And maybe the fact that they didn't show up for whatever the reason, maybe it's justifiable, but maybe not. Maybe they slept in, which maybe is justifiable also, but maybe for whatever the reason they didn't show up. But here, the halacha is questioning one of three possibilities as to who would be obligated to pay. How do you spend your money? Where does that money come from? Either it comes from Haitzah's Mamon Hekdish, from the synagogue funds, or it comes from everybody who's in the minyan because they benefited, or maybe we're going to say almost as a knas, as a penalty, as a punishment. Imagine you did that. I mean, Charlie, I don't really think about that as a fundraiser. That's a super fundraiser. Like, what if you did a knas? Everybody who doesn't come to shul on a regular basis for whatever programs, classes, shiurim, tefillos, oh my gosh. You're building buildings left, right, and center. I'm talking about all around the world, right? So how would that go? So it's not just that the people that were there, they benefited. Oh, the people that weren't there, they caused this debacle. The fact that the guy was able to find a Yehudi, who's a moniot, a Nahag Monit, that he was able to find him, maybe that was just good luck. Obviously, Mazel, Malkum, Zman, Loshan, it's Siyata Dishmai was able to do it. But maybe there, themselves, they should be held responsible. And I would say fourth and final option is that maybe the driver shouldn't obligate, like Linda, you're saying that maybe, right? Like Carol, you're also saying it doesn't feel right. Like maybe he shouldn't even ask for the money. Maybe the money is just something he should look. He's number 10. What a schus. You know what it means? Oh, we understand in the Gemara what it means to be number 10. You're the tenter. You know what the tenter, the tenth of the minyan means? You're the minyan man. The minyan man is the one, as the Gemara Maseches Megillah tells us, number 10 is how you say Elokeinu. It's like you bring God, you bring the Shechina. It's the bringing of the Eda, the Kehila, is represented by number 10. Oh, really? We should pay you? You should pay us! When I remember when I was in yeshiva, there was a guy who would like stand outside the Beis Medrash door. He wanted to be number 10. So he like waited. And he like was gonna knock that guy out, right? Like the Mishnayos and Maseches Yuma, the Mishnayos talk about the Kohanim who would run to take the Trumas Hadesh, and they would take the ashes. They wanted to take the ashes off the altar, so they would run. In the second chapter, Mishnah Beis, Perek Beis, Mishnah Beis, the Mishnah says that they would run up the Kohanim up the ramp, and whoever was first was Zocha to it. And then they realized what would happen is as soon as they got there, one Kohen gave a little bit of one of those, and the Kohen fell, broke his leg, and they had to make a pious. They had to make a goyro. They had to make a lottery because that. So this guy, he was not going to not be number 10. He would stand by the entrance of the Beis HaKnesses, of the Beis Medrash rather, and he was going to, in the study hall, and he was going to wait. He saw 1, 2, 3, 9, 10. I'm going in. So I say a fourth option is not that the mom and hektish, not that the people that were there, not that the people that didn't show up. Who are you to ask for the money? You know what kind of schus you have to be number 10? How about this? You give us free taxi rides to Yerushalayim to take us to Big Apple Pizza, Ben Yehuda Street, and you buy the pizza because you're a lucky guy that you were able to be number 10. What do you think about that? I don't know how that's going to go.
It's a good marketing tool.
What? It's a good marketing
tool.
Rabbi, do you think when people join a synagogue, they join a synagogue taking on the responsibility to attend Minyanim? Or do they join a synagogue to be part of a community? I bet you if you put out a questionnaire, they don't think anything about Minyanim.
Right. I'd be scared to put out such a questionnaire. I would learn a lot, actually, about people if I put such a questionnaire. I mean, listen, people join a community for a whole host of reasons, but what we're understanding by just the virtue of this question, that there actually comes responsibilities with being part of a community. It's not just like, I got to do what's right. Or I got to go to synagogue for holidays. Everybody looks, I should say everybody, people look like what the synagogue is going to be able to do for me. Like, so I need a place to go for Rosh Hashanah. I need a place to go for Yom Kippur. I want to say Kaddish. I want to daven. Okay. But there's an obligation that comes with that. And the obligation of that obviously is manifest in dues, right? That comes with what comes with it. But what we're understanding is another layer of that. When a person pays for something, so they think that they have the rights to it, which I guess there's a level of that. I pay for it. So maybe what I did is I'm paying for my right. I don't have to come to Minyan if I don't want to. I'm just paying. My name's on a list. What do I got to come? So the answer is when you pay, you obligate yourself. This is an unusual entity. This is an unusual enterprise. If I join LA Fitness, I can decide to come. I can decide not to come. I'm not obligated to like make sure that there are people on the treadmills every day. But we're obligated to make sure that that things that need to happen happen. And it's I think I mentioned it before. There's like a maybe it's a grassroots movement. I know that Eshet Torah did this in like a mass remarketing
retooling,
campaign.
Retooling.
Retooling, a remarketing campaign. They decided to go to create a different language. And I know a few of my rabbinic colleagues have thought about doing the same thing. Instead of calling people members, if there's a membership, so Eshet Torah has what we call a partnership. Right. In fact, they actually have an annual partners conference, and it's anybody and everybody. So imagine our shul went from, or any shul went from, you're paying membership dues to paying partnership dues. You're a partner. You're a stakeholder. You're an investor. That means when you see a wrapper on the floor, you're going to pick it up because I'm not going to let my business, Kaviyachal, I'm not going to let my synagogue look like there's a wrapper. I'm not going to make it sure that the air conditioning is not working, that the windows are busted, that the shades are shoddy. I'm gonna make sure that there's things that are there that need to be there, right? People don't look at it like that. I think it's probably a good idea if I do not construct a questionnaire. I'm happy that people are there, but again, that's all part of the outreach. People are signing up. As many people sign up, there's way more people that have not signed up. So we're just like, we have such a Yuridas Hadoros, so we have such a degradation of generation that we're just happy that people are signing up. We don't ask them questions. The only thing we want to make sure is that they're not criminals. And as long as they're not criminals and they're not dangerous, come on in. Great, but that's easier said than done, as our leadership knows. What do you say about that? I feel the same way. Yes, Doc.
So I think the question before us goes to the very essence of what communal responsibility is in terms of who should be paying, because we all pay federal taxes, and that those taxes may be used to build a highway in North Dakota that we're never going to drive on. And people living in North Dakota can say, gee, I'm never going to drive on I-95 by Palmetto Park Road in Florida. Why should I have to pay taxes for that? So communal responsibility means we have an understanding that as members of a community, whether it's a citizen of the United States or a member of a kahila, that there's a benefit that accrues to all of us by making sure that there's a minyan. So clearly the nine who need the 10th to fulfill the minyan get a benefit. But even those who were not there get a benefit because they know there's a minyan. What if you have to say Kaddish? You'd feel very bad if you had to go there and there's no minyan. Right. So we delegate the responsibility for making sure that there's a minyan to the shul administration, to the gabbai, and you say, here, you do whatever you have to do to make sure that there's a minyan. And we don't have a meeting to discuss the minutia of how you disperse funds. We try and put that responsibility in the hands of, our designees to decide how to, properly use the community funds. So to me, there's no question that this has to come from the, shul's pushka, whatever you want to call it.
Right, right. Interesting. I like that because really what it is, I actually had this conversation with somebody a few years ago, is that they didn't come to minyan, but they said that they're supporting that there is minyan. They believe that there should be minyan. They said their work schedule, their religious observance, whatever the answer was, it was almost irrelevant because it might not be as sobering, actually, is what you're saying, is that people will agree. They might not agree that they have to be there, but they're going to agree that it should be there. But then that obviously introduces the question: is that right? Is that okay? Is that sufficient? I'm not saying circumstantially, and the only reason why I'm saying that is the very next lines of what we're in our text here, and the next line is like wild. It's a wild. Like if I didn't have it myself in front of you, you'd think I'm like, making this up here. But look at this, and this is the response. Now again, Orach Chaim, which is Shulchan Aruch. Simon Nun Hey, and this is the Ramah. Now, who's the Ramah? This is the Mechaber, the Ramah. The Ramah is Rabbi Moshe Isserles. That's who we Ashkenazim follow. This isn't like just some like random, obscure, source. This is it. This is it. So listen to what he says. B'makom, this is a statement from the Ramah. You can look this up in Shulchan Aruch. I'm saying it slow because it's a knockout. It's a doozy. B'makom she'ein minyan tamid bebeis haKnesses, in a place where there is not a minyan regular in a synagogue, kofim ze ez ze B'knosais shevo tamid minyan lebeis haknesses shelo yivatel tamid. What's kofin mean? You can force. What's a knas with a penalty? You can force people to come and tax them further because they should come. Or they, I guess, maybe you could say they should at least provide the way that there should be a minyan, meaning maybe other people should come. You should just provide the wherewithal that other people should be there. Like, how are you going to have a minyan? But it seems to suggest that that person is not coming. Now, does that mean, but makom she'ein minyan tamid b'beisa knesses kofin ze ezeh? That puts the onus on the people that come and they don't come, right? Or does that put the onus on everybody? And that everybody, maybe, has to check in every once in a while to make sure that there's a minyan. And that if somebody found, if like random person is a member, you know, you could call, if you didn't have a minyan, for example, who do we call when there's no minyan? We call the minyanaires, right? We call the people that come to the minyan. Hey, sorry, Yankel, Beryl, Shmuel, Beryl, you know, Shmulek, can you come to minyan? We're running short. But what we're understanding here is, who can you call? You can call anybody on the membership list. Why? Because it's their obligation to list. And not only that, by the way, I don't know if, Charlie, if you ever thought about doing this, but what would happen if you, we put a text message together. Uh-huh. We didn't see you at the minyan this morning. That's going to be $50. That's going to be $25, right? This isn't my words. This isn't Charlie's words. This is a Ramah. Now, does this Ramah not go?
Yeah, sign into the Ramah.
What? What'd you say?
Sign it the Ramah.
You have to pay $50 with love, Rabbi Moshe Isserles. Undersigned, Media Past President Charlie Trowering. Like that. That would be a doozy. Right? I love that. But does that mean that the obligation is no longer, I mean, once you have a minyan, so that person, like, can you give a knas to somebody who doesn't come that they should come because they should come, because they should just come? Or, like, does a person have to submit a form, the reason why they're not coming? Yeah, I'm not coming because I have to be at the office. I'm doing this, I'm doing that. I have no idea. Or do we say that once it's a minyan, so there's no knasos. You don't. If you read the Ramah directly, she'ein minyan talmid b'beis haknesses. There is no minyan. Seems to suggest that once you have a minyan, no knas. Or do we say that anybody who doesn't come, they get a knas? This is the fundraiser of all fundraisers, right here, right now. What do you think about that one? That's like a doozy, no?
I think we'd worry about losing membership, maybe, but
yeah.
But in some
have a different problem,
have
right?
People like they have like a rotation of people who have to attend. Like everybody obligates. This is your day, or this is right. Your day this month.
Yeah, sure. Listen, communities have been creative in doing that. As long as it seems there's a minion, you're good. But the obligation is everybody's. The obligation is everybody's. And at the very least, maybe what you know, I would say to that person again, if this is a conversation maybe 2 or 3 years ago, is that he would say that my funds, I'm not going to come to minyan, but support the Shemini minyan. So maybe at some point, that people want to know that there might have to be a line item that spends people's membership dues to be sure to it that there's a minyan. If you're not going to be able to make it, by the way, that happens a lot. That's not an uncommon practice. Let's just say, for example, a person loses a family member, right? And the Kaddish that needs to be said 3 times a day. You want Kaddish to be said at all minyanim, but you know yourself, you're not going to go to every minyan. That doesn't happen all the time. It happens all the time. So you go to, Chevre Lomde Mishnah, or you go to the shul, you go to the rabbi, you go to the gabbai, and you say, okay, can you say Kaddish for such a person? Yeah. And what do? They pay that person. Okay. So is there anything wrong with that? He's saying Kaddish anyway. What's he doing? He's thinking. $100 a week for thinking about Shmerel Ben Merrill? The answer is, I don't know. What's that money doing? The money's guaranteeing that he's going to say the Kaddish. That's what he's doing. So if the money's guaranteeing that there's going to be a minion, there's going to be a minion. Dave, what do you think about that, Ramah? I saw you you weren't so sure. It's power. It's a knockout, right? It's a punch to the gut. I mean, we could never get away with that today. Never. Giving knassos. You can canass me all you want, but you're gonna have a rat. You're gonna have a
nice try,
right? You yourself and I, right? Okay, good. All right, last couple minutes here. Vadvarim kalvachamer, last paragraph. says, this is the Dvarim Kavachomer. Im Kainsen es Mishalo Megia Bechol Yom Letfila. He says, like, if you're going to have the right to tax, to penalize those who don't come to the services every day, because everybody, for the purpose of everybody, should really make every effort to come, right? People should be zriza magdim mitzvos. They should run to with alacrity to do mitzvos. Halvachomer sha'osa adam. Then all the more so, he says that those people should be glalo lohaya minyan. That person who didn't show up, right? That because of him, biglalo lohaya minyan shechayv l'shalim es d'meha. That he has to. That guy has to pay for the nahag.
First of all, they also would need something that would be like a 3-bedroom.
Oh, sorry, I thought that. Charlie, you might want to mute. Okay, so kal v'chomesh also other biglalo. This is all the more so the guy that because of him lo hayam minyan shechayv l'shalim es d'meha nahag. It's their responsibility. Yeah, I kind of was initially. I'm opining like you, Doc, that it's really should be the obligation of the whole Kehila, right? And maybe that is the whole Kehila, right? They said there's 12 people, and these are the people. Because they didn't show up, those are the ones who are responsible. It's not the 9 that were there. You're going to punish them? They were the beneficiaries because they had a minion? You're not going to make them pay. They came to minion. They got up early in the morning. It was snowing. It was sleeting. It was raining. It was hot. They got up at Lahaya minion shachayav l'shalim es d'mei anahag. Shehishlim es a minion b'mkomo. That, hold on. Yeah. Because that this driver was the one who completed the minion in their place. They should pay for that, right? I don't have to go, but I have to make sure that somebody's there, right? You're not going to say the Kaddish, you're not going to David, you're not going to do whatever shluchos it is going to be, but I'm going to pay you to do it. Now, maybe you want to say, like Carol said, he should just do it right. It's the right thing for him to do because he has an obligation himself. I don't know. He has an obligation to David, and he's earning a livelihood to support his family. The gam yeluk tzas kapara, and in fact, he says in this one last line, it maybe on some level it's a kapara. What's a kapara? It's an atonement. Really, these people, they should have been there, and so therefore, it's going to atone for the fact that what would have happened if there would have been not? What would happen if there's a town of 10 people, and number 10 he doesn't come, and there's no minion because of him? He's not showing up. He slept in. Oh, I'm sorry, I slept in. I was too tired. So that's is that an avera? Those are strong words, but there's a kapara. There's an atonement. So that means by those three guys paying. Right. To be sure to it that there was dominion in this. There's a kapara, there's an atonement, there's an appeasement that takes place. Share bezes schar adam bimkoma, because they pay for the guy that he was in their place. And the fact that he's in their place, there was a minion. Shalom Yisrael. This opens up like a lot of different little avenues here, which of course we can explore them all. But I think it's a fascinating case. It's a fascinating introducing of just the concept of responsibility and what the community responsibility, what the individual responsibility is. How do things run? How are things supposed to run? Who pays what this Ramos says? You can kofen, beknossos. Wow. It's like, wow, it's like a doozy. It's a triple doozy, quadruple doozy. It's intense. And it's gewaltig, all in one. All in one. I love it. Questions, comments, concerns. You can throw tomatoes. It might splatter.
I just have like a side comment that I've heard, you know, in different shuls that we've been in, they don't have somebody who runs maybe the children's program. And so what they do is they have different people, you know, you have to take your turn. Right. And some people do not enjoy that. And so they complain, and they do it anyway, but they're not happy. And that here, it's a different situation because they actually need somebody to show up. But there's so many times that in the shul, there are only some people just, you know, that's not their thing, or they like the kehila when they're there, but they don't have that connection just the same. And maybe, so I don't know. There's no answer to it. I'm just throwing it out there.
Right. No, but it's interesting because at the end of the day, like to Linda's questionnaire, really, at the end of the day, like when you sign up for shul, you're really supposed to, officially, you're supposed to sign up. If you want to have your cake and eat it too, you want to sign up for everything that shul and community is supposed to be. Even if there are certain things that are, quote, not your thing, but you know that it's the thing of the shul. Like if it was announced, if God forbid an email went out from any shul that there's no minion, you'd be like, ow, that's not good. Even though I only come for the kiddush, you know, I'm a just, JFK. I'm a JFKer. I'm a Just for Kiddush guy, right? I don't even come for Shacharis. I don't come for Musaf. I come just for Kiddush on a Shabbos morning, but it doesn't matter. I would be sad and disheartened to learn that there's no, you know, that there's no minion, because no one could do it. Or about Kore. Right? What about Kore? What about a Chazan for high holidays? There's some shuls that have a Chazan all year round, right? So I just got a call from somebody last week. He wants to know if we want to hire a Chazan every couple of months. I mean, you can come down for the omelet if you want, you know, without pay. What about a Baal Kore? You pay a Baal Kore. It's not just because he knows how to do it, and therefore, if it wasn't for that, we wouldn't read it, even though that's what would happen. The obligation of the Baal Kore is simply acting as a shaliach, as a messenger on your stead, right? When I get called to an aliyah, it's my aliyah. I have an obligation to lane it. We don't do that because most people don't know how to lane. So the Shliach Tzibor, or in this case, the Baal Kore, is the emissary, is the shaliach of the person who has the aliyah, and he's laning. And that's why the person who has the aliyah has to say it in undertone alongside with it, not too loud to distract the Baal Kore. But we pay a Baal Kore. Why do we pay a Baal Kore? You're doing something for the Tzibor. If it wasn't for you doing it, we'd have no Kriyas HaTorah. I've never been to a minyan ever on a Monday, Thursday, Mincha, Shabbos Mincha, that there was Lani and there wasn't a Baal Kore. There's always a Baal Kore. You've got to slog through it and not really know all the trouble. You say the words, you do what it is. We've all done that before. Been there, done that. But, so it's just a fascinating observation, fascinating source, I think. It's a fascinating case, and it really dovetails into like so many different areas. And it probably would break my heart if I did it.
Perhaps synagogues should have emergency lists of people who can be called if there's a shortage.
Yeah, I would call that miluim. Somebody said to me, what did I say? Maybe I said this publicly. What's the joke? You know the joke, the rabbi meets the guy in the synagogue, in the supermarket. And he says, you know, Shmerel, I haven't seen you. You know, we just have high holidays. Usually come Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. I haven't seen you. I missed you at the service. The guy leans on and says, Rabbi, I'm in the secret service. So the guy's like, I'm in Miluim. Call me. You need active duty? You ever need 10? Call me. So like I've heard that over the years so many times. Like, all right, we need 10. He's like, how many got? I'm like, I don't know, you're number one. He's like, that's not what I'm talking about, Rabbi. Give me, if you're at 9 and it's 20 minutes after davening and someone's calling for your resignation and they threw something at you, then that means you're in an emergency, and then call me and then I'll bail you out. Like, yeah, really good friend of you. Yeah, sure. Yeah, right. All right.
We're technologically advanced because we have a WhatsApp group for the minion.
Yes, it's true. We're very lucky. That's true.
It's a big difference.
Right. But I guess to that point, it's good and it's bad. It's good because you know that you can reach people. It's bad when nobody responds. That's bad. And it's worse. It's worse when you can see that people read it and they don't respond. I get the block on the block. But you're right. We are advanced. You could reach out to people when you need them. You don't need a vekar, right? In the yeshivas, they used to have what they call a vekar. You know, Vekar is the waker. The Vekar is the waker. He goes around the base medrash. He goes around the town. In the towns, when they say slichos, today they throw hot water on this guy and tell him to get lost, get on a bus, and don't return. But in Europe, and in Israel, they would dance. It's time for slichos. Time for slichos. Oh, do that now.
That would really work.
Call the cops. Anyway, lots of fun. Great learning together.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, everybody. Have a great rest of your Monday. Great week. We'll be in touch. Stay happy. Stay healthy. Stay safe. Misha nichnas adar marbim besimcha.
Amen.
Thank you.